So we've completed our definitions of basar and of chalav, and now it's time to define bishul. Just maybe very quickly, one last thing, that we didn't fully complete our definitions of basar and chalav, because we never discussed basar dagim, whether basar dagim, right? Did we? Did we discuss basar dagim? So maybe just a little bit of about basar dagim, not too much. The Gemara in Maseches Chulin seems to imply that eating fish and milk is never a problem. In fact, whenever the Gemara wants to give an example of a parav item, it always uses fish as the parav item. The only discussion is whether fish cooked in a fleishik pan can then be eaten with dairy. But the assumption is fish cooked in a parav pan for sure can be eaten with dairy. So the Beis Yosef, however, has this comment over here in Simon Pei Zayin that you're not allowed to eat fish and milk together. So even though Gemara Chulin Kuf Gimel Amid Beis says that when the Torah asks meat and milk, it does not include fish, you know, it does not include basar dagim or basar of insects or anything like that. Beis Yosef writes here in Simon Pei Zayin that even though there's no halachic prohibition, it could still be dangerous. It's sakana to have fish and milk together. And Beis Yosef says, and all you got to do to know more about this is look what I wrote in Or HaChaim in Simon Kuf Ayin Gimel. Now that is shocking, right? You've all heard about not having fish and meat together, but you've probably never heard about not having fish and milk together. 9 days menu means fish, right? 9 days menu means you could have fish and milk. That's always the way we assume. There's no Gemara that talks about eating fish and milk being a sakana. So there are two basic approaches that the poskim have to that issue. The Darkei Moshe, the Rama, in Yeridei over here, he strongly questions the idea that there's some sort of danger involved in eating fish and milk together. He says he's never heard of anybody being careful about such a thing. And if you actually look to where the Beis Yosef points you to, in Or HaChaim, Simon Kuf Ayin Gimel, that the Beis Yosef says, you see, look over there, it doesn't say anything over there about eating fish and milk together. It only talks about eating fish and meat together and says that that is a dangerous thing to do. That's asur mishum sakana. So based on that, the Darkei Moshe says, what you have to conclude is that the Beis Yosef has confused milk with meat. That's his expression. The Beis Yosef has confused milk with meat, and there is no room for any concerns of consuming fish and milk together. And in fact, most poskim agree with the Darkei Moshe. The Shach in Sifkatan Hay over here, the Taz in Sifkatan Gimel, both say explicitly, Beis Yosef was simply a ta'us sofer. It's a typo in the Beis Yosef. I once gave a whole series of shiurim on Shavuos about famous typos and, you know, the halachic discussion around famous typos. This is like top of the list, that this whole Beis Yosef is one big typo. He really meant to say that you can't have fish and meat because of sakana, but not fish and milk. Even the great Sephardic posik, the Chida, agrees that it's a misprint in the Beis Yosef, and that's what compelled later Sephardic poskim to allow fish and milk together, because many Sephardi Jews consider the Chida to be like the authority, and as authoritative as the Beis Yosef himself. You can look in the Pesachei Tshuva here in Sifkatan Tes, where he writes that even if there once was a danger of eating fish and milk, that danger no longer applies, and there's no ill effects. People have tried it. People have done it for years, and it's considered a healthy diet. There's nothing wrong with it. The Aruch HaShulchan says that there's no place that there's even a minhag to be careful about this. That is one approach. Let me just do the second approach, and we'll take a question. Second approach to the Beis Yosef is the Kaf HaChayim, another great Sephardic posik. The Kaf HaChayim, in his commentary to Yerideh, Simon Pei Zayin, Sifkan Chavdalid, says that even though Ashkenazi poskim don't find a health concern with eating fish and milk together, different areas have different atmospheres, which may lead to different health concerns, and some people may be more vulnerable to certain, I don't know, viruses, let's say, pandemics, and for some reason in one country the death rate is up here, and another country it's down there, and you know, different atmospheres lead to different vulnerabilities health-wise, and it could be that in the Middle Eastern countries, in Sephardic countries, they've discovered that eating fish and milk was very dangerous, but in Ashkenazi countries, they had no such discovery, and also what could be damaging to one person may not be damaging to another person based on their genes. In fact, Rabbeinu Bechai in Parshas Mishpatim says that the doctors of his time thought that mixing fish and milk is dangerous, and as such, says the Kaf HaChaim, knowing that staying away from dangerous activity is even more severe than Isur, Chamira Sakanta Me Isura, we're more machmir about Sakana than we are about Isur, so you shouldn't eat fish and milk together. And the Knesset HaGedolah says that when the Beis Yosef refers you back to Kufay and Gimel, and you look in Kufay and Gimel and Aruch Chaim, and it's all about fish and meat, that's not a typo. He was telling you, look back to Kufay and Gimel, where I speak about fish and meat, and you should then say, just like fish and meat is a sakana, so too fish and milk is a sakana. That's what the Beis Yosef meant to say. And the Tshuva's Beis David, Siman Lamed Gimel, he points out that the context in which the Beis Yosef makes a comment suggests that it's not a misprint, and that he clearly meant to aser fish and milk together. Because what's the context over here? The context over here is defining what's meat. And he says, oh, by the way, basar dagim is not meat, but still you can't have it with chalav. That follows. It makes sense that still you can't have it with chalav. You can't say it's a typo. He meant, but still you can't have it with basar, right? That wouldn't make sense in this context. Still you can't have it with chalav makes sense in this context. And there are Sephardi Jews and some Hasidim as well that are careful not to eat fish and milk together. Even they are only machmir with real milk, but dairy ingredients like butter with fish, almost everyone is mekel about. Rav Avadya has a tshuva about this in the sixth volume of Yichav Adas, which we used to call the last volume of Yichav Adas, but Rav Avadya just came out with a new volume of Yichav Adas, which is pretty miraculous. A new volume was just printed of Yichav Adas, I guess of previously unpublished tshuvas. So Rav Avadya has a thorough discussion of what the Sephardic practice in fact is, but I just thought till we cover that, we probably shouldn't move on to the definition of bishul. But now I feel comfortable, we can move on to the definition of bishul. Yeah, question.
What if the kind of five, you were in a situation where you had to eat one or the other, meat and cheese not cooked together, just together, and fish and milk together, probably meat and cheese, right?
If you really take it seriously as a sakana, I don't know how. I'm saying, yeah, I don't think he would tell you to violate basar b'chalav before you do this because it's not really, you know.
He says sakana.
Maybe. I don't know if you have that, the better choice. Don't eat. I'm not sure. Even with meat and fish, I'll tell you, Rav Shechter is not makbid on using separate forks for meat and fish at all. He Paskins like the Magen Avraham writes that the sakana, we don't know of any sakana that's caused by meat and fish anymore, and therefore he thinks that that the whole thing is mutter nowadays. He doesn't like have schnapps in between one and the other. When he came to my house once, my in-laws were over also, and my father-in-law offered him a l'chaim after the fish, so he had a l'chaim after the fish. And it was great. Then he started telling all these stories, and he said, "I'm a little drunk, so I'm telling a lot of stories." So afterwards, I right after Shabbos, like I took notes on everything I heard from him over Shabbos. So I sent it to Rav Shai, and he said, "So one of the things I said is I was surprised that he drank a l'chaim between fish and meat." He said he was just like humoring your father-in-law. He wasn't, he's not makvid about that at all. He's never, he uses the same fork, he doesn't even wash it off. He doesn't think that that's an issue at all. That's why the OU will give hashkacha to Worcester sauce, I think it's called. It's a sauce that has fish. What? Yeah, that has fish in it. So they give hashkacha without putting an OU fish. An OUF, normally they have an OU fish for something that's fish, so you can know to be careful, because it's pachus mishishim. That's fish. Plus, maybe the whole sakana doesn't apply anyway. So it's a svek sveka. So because there's a machlokas whether sakana is batel b'shishim, machlokas shachan taz, and a further possibility of the Magen Avraham that the whole thing doesn't apply anymore. So svek sveka, you could be mekel. So they're willing to be mekel because Rav Shechter is mekel in the whole Indian.
So I'm sorry to pick on a detail, but this is something I use. So Worcestershire that says,
oh, you
fish, that's more than
shishim? Yeah, it's more than shishim. If it says, oh, you fish, it's more than shishim. That's what they do. Yeah.
So I could be confusing with something else, but what, if I remember correctly, I believe that River Sarah, they had like, so they had like meat makers in the Chayar Ochal, and then one of, yeah, pretty close. But so one of them was, it said like no fish. It was like the smarty plenty maker.
Ooh.
It said no fish on it. So, and I asked somebody once, and they said that's fine. Don't
have right, fish. Right. No.
Fish and milk.
You don't have fish and milk. Huh? Yeah. So many chashuv svarim don't have fish and milk. Are you the only svarim here? Fish and milk? No fish and milk. Okay. Many chashuv svarim don't have fish and milk. Yeah. In fact, there's in Hasidim also there's a hashkacha in Eretz Yisrael. You know that each time that a new hashkacha opens in Eretz Yisrael, it's very political, and you get government funding for it. So you have to explain to the government why your hashkacha is needed. So one hashkacha said because the Bedatze de Charedis allows fish and milk, and we're gonna be that was like their chumrah that allowed them to get the government funding for their whole not even a Sephardi hashkacha. It was just a hechitimtza to be able to make some money, which unfortunately sometimes happens in kashrus. Okay, moving along. So now let's go to the definition of bishul. Now we're ready. So there is a Gemara in the Masechet Sanhedrin, Daf Dalet, that you all saw this morning. Daf Dalet and Beis. The Gemara discusses Yeshem LeMikra, Yeshem LeMesoris. If words in the Torah are sometimes spelled differently than they're pronounced, which one do we look at? Do we look at the Mesoris, the way we have a Mesorah to spell it, or do we look at the Mikra, the way it is read, the way that we pronounce it? So in the context of that discussion, the Gemara discusses the Pasuk Lo Savash Gdi Be Ches Lamed Beis Imo. So what does that mean? You can't cook a gdi be what? Be chalav, the milk of its mother, or chalev, the fats of its mother. So we know we have a mikra. The mikra is bechalev imo, which means the chalav of its mother. So the Gemara says in discussing how to read the word ches lamed beis, chalev or chalav, and the fact that we have an iser basar bechalav is a raya that it must be chalav and not chalev, and that proves yeshel m'masoros. Now the Gemara then says it can't possibly mean chalev. It doesn't prove anything because there was never a possibility it could mean chalev. Why can't it mean chalev? Because Amar Rav Achav, Reid Ravika, Amar Kra, Lo Sevashel Gedi. Derech Bishul Asra Torah. The Pasuk can't mean Chalev because the Pasuk says don't be Mivashel. And it wouldn't fit the Pasuk if it was talking about Chalev. But the Gemara doesn't explain why it wouldn't fit the Pasuk. Why not? Why not say don't cook Chalev, don't cook Gedi in the Chalev of its mother? Why can't that fit the Pasuk? In what way does Derech Bishul prove beyond any doubt that the Pasuk is talking about milk? So two explanations. You have Rashi, and then you have the Yesh Mefarshim of Tosfos. Rashi writes, Chalav Tzolul Kemayim V'iko Bishul. Chalav, with a kamatz, is Tzolul Kemayim, is clear like water, meaning is, not clear, is liquid like water, and therefore it's shaykh to talk about Bishul. Aval Chalav, with a tzerei, Eino bishul ela tigun. That would never be called bishul. That would be called tigun. What's tigun?
Frying.
Frying. Right? That would be frying. That would not be bishul. So cooking meat with fat would be tigun, not bishul. And therefore, since the Torah uses the word lo sevashel, you know that it can't be chalev. The definition of bishul means with a liquid medium, not with fat. So it turns out, according to Rashi, the definition of bishul l'chora, from a Torah perspective, and over here it's by basar b'chalav, l'svashli b'chalev imo, has to be with a liquid medium, and it's different than the definition of bishul by bishul b'shabbos. Bishul b'shabbos, everyone would agree that if you fry something on Shabbos, you're chayev nishum bishul b'shabbos. Rashi seems to assume that, by bishul basar b'chalav, we have a different definition of bishul, because by Shabbos, the malacha is not even really bishul. What's the malacha? Afia, right? So it's machlokas, we're showing actually what the real av malacha, which is the told of what. But the point is, by Shabbos, it's clearly opened up to more types of changing food with heat, right, than just bishul. But over here, by basar b'chalav, it's dafka bishul. Then Tosfos and Sanhedrin comes along and says, v'yesh mefarshim, after he quotes Rashi, v'yesh mefarshim, derech bishul asra Torah, de below bishul shari, Valide bishul asr. He says, no, the emphasis is not on the word bishul, it's on the word asra. Derech bishul asra Torah. The Torah only asrs basar b'chalav because you cooked it together. But it implies, had it not been cooked together, then these items would have been perfectly kosher. That's the whole chiddush of basar b'chalav. It's the only thing in the Torah other than shatnez, where you take two totally permissible items, you have heter plus heter, you put them together and you get iser. Normally you have Isser impacting something else, impacting a Heter. But here you have Heter and Heter, and you put it together and you get Isser. So the Derech Bishul Asra Torah implies that it's only through the Bishul that the Torah makes it Asr. Because Chalev is not kosher even before you cooked it. So according to Tosos, frying, roasting, doesn't make a difference. It's all called Bishul. The Gedarim L'chaora would be the same when it comes to Shabbos, when it comes to Basar B'Chalev. It's not about Tigun versus Bishul, according to the Yesh Mefarshim of Tosos. This is a fascinating Shalit Rabbi Sablovsky loves to talk about. Since he's coming for Shabbos, let's quote him. I mean, I'm quoting him a lot over here. I listen to a lot of his shiur. But Rabbi Sablovsky spoke about, for some reason, he didn't reveal which child it was, but he said years ago, I think it was in 1989, Rabbi Willig, or maybe even earlier, Rabbi Willig, Shlita, and his wife had a child. They were blessed with a child. And that child was the first child born in the new year in Riverdale. In the Bronx, in the entire Bronx. So they give a Baby of the Year award in the Bronx for the first child born in the hospital. So they come in with balloons or whatever and a little gift package for the new mommy and daddy because they have the child of the year. So one of Rabbi Willick's children is the child of the year from the Bronx. And they look through the gift package and there is a restaurant, there's a gift card to a very famous Treif steakhouse. All of the steaks in that steakhouse are fried in butter. So Rabbi Willig is not going to eat at the steakhouse, obviously, but what did he have a havamina of doing? Maybe he can give it to a housekeeper or sell the gift card, right? Are you allowed to get hana'a from the steaks in whatever steakhouse it was, where all the steaks are fried in butter? So they're not cooked in butter, they're fried in butter. So is that, if you hold tigun as bishul, then it's a problem. That's mamish, basar b'chalav, that's mevushal. So they thought that maybe there's you could be makel. Two tzadim l'hakel. One tzad l'hakel is maybe tigun's not bishul, maybe you're like Rashi. That tigun is not bishul, basar b'chalav. What's the other tzad l'hakel? It's all nevela, right? And you have the nekuda nefla of the Rambam. So the isra hana'a goes along with the isra achila. So ein isra chalal isser. So maybe it's mutter based on that svek sveka. That maybe we pass from like the Rambam's nekuda nefla. And even if you don't pass from like the Rambam's nekuda hanefla, maybe tikkun is not bishul anyway. And therefore you have a svek sveka that is not a basa b'chol daraisa, and you can sell it maybe. Over here, we're darshaning the pasuk. We're saying, since it says lo sevashal kadiba chalevimo, we're darshaning that it's the bishul that generates an iser. But generally speaking, yeah, you could have iser chalal iser. But over here, we're assuming that the bishul is what generates the iser. Oh, I mean, this should be the source according to the Yeshua Parsha. Interesting. Okay. Good. Yeah. Sorry, Rabbi Willig, I don't know. I don't even know which kid it was. I don't even know what year it was. I said 1989. That sounds a little late. Rabbi Willig's kids, he has a few kids that are older than me. So I don't know if he was still having kids in 1989. Maybe he was. I don't know.
He could have sold it.
Maybe. Lachori, you have a Svek Sveka. So Lachori, he could have sold it. So that's as far as Tigun is concerned. Rabbi Kiveger in the bottom of the Shulchan Aruch here, if you take a look in the Shulchan Aruch, he quotes to look at the Pri Chadash. He says, "I am Pri Chadash, Tegam Tzli V'Iroi V'Tzonin L'Tocham Havidaraisa." He starts listing other ways of cooking things that are bishul, you know, by Shabbos, to pour cold into something hot, meaning kli rishon, that's what we call kli rishon, or tzli, roasting something. All of that, he says, is bishul daraisa. In other words, any form of bishul that's asur on Shabbos is also asur with basar b'chalav, which would mean tigun is also asur mishum basar b'chalav. So to pour boiling hot milk, let's say, from a kli rishon down a fleshig drain, right? Let's say you have one sink in your house. Let's say, someone once told me that. Oh, last summer, right? We had four of us, right? Last summer when we went to visit Rav Ruving. Remember, I don't know if you remember this, but Rav Ruving told the Maisa. He said that one of his daughters came home from school one day and said, Rav Ruving Feinstein is Rav Ruving. Stam Rav Ruving is Rav Ruving Feinstein. Okay, so Rav Ruving Ruzovsky. Okay, fine. Rav Ruving Feinstein. Rav Ruving Feinstein told us that one of his daughters came home from school one day and she said that her Mora said that she would never eat in someone's house if they have only one sink. For Milchik's inflation, because they have only one sink. She would never eat in such a house. So Rav Ruving said his daughter raised her hand in class. And the teacher said, yes, Miss Feinstein. And she said, you wouldn't eat at my Zaidi Maishi's house? Because Maishi Feinstein lived in a tenement in the Lower East Side. They didn't have like fancy, they didn't have like five downs kitchens over there. There's no two sinks. Of course they had only one sink. So when you have only one sink, what's going to happen is very often the flesh that's part of the drain is going to be the same drain that the milch you poured down the drain. So you would never think of this. Imagine you use the same drain and there may be some particles of meat that are stuck in the drain. And now you have boiling hot milk that you want to pour out. So you pour it down the same drain. That's Eroi. Eroi of boiling hot, you're being mevashel basa b'chalav. Is that a violation of Israel, of bishul basa b'chalav? L'chora. So let's discuss some kulas that maybe. So first of all, Rabbi Kivegru quotes a shita at the end that ain bishul achar bishul. And usually, if there are meat particles in the drain, they were already previously cooked. They're from last night's dinner or something, so they were already cooked. So maybe there's no kshasha bishul basa b'chalav when something was already mevushal once. If the meat in the drain is raw, then that heter won't work, right? Meaning, then it's not. Then it would be an initial bishul. Another possible kula is based on what the Kesef Mishnah writes in Hilchos Tumas Meis, and this is a shvera kula, but maybe what it's an interesting Kesef Mishnah to talk about at least. In Hilchos Tumas Meis, Parak Aleph Halacha Beis, the Kesef Mishnah, which was authored by the Mechaber of Yosef Cairo, right? So the Kesef Mishnah, the Kesef Mishnah says that the entire Isser of cooking Basar B'Chalav is really a Siyag D'Oraisa, lest you come to eat Basar B'Chalav. Aye, but it's an Isser D'Oraisa! Sometimes even an Isser D'Oraisa is just a Geder and a Siyag also. Meaning, normally we think of a geder, a siyag, a fence around the Torah, as something that the Rabbanan do. The Rabbanan say, don't clap and dance on Shabbos, maybe you'll be misakin klishir, maybe you'll be misakin an instrument, or something like that. So that's a din mi de Rabbanan, lest you come too, right? But sometimes, says the Kesef Mishnah, the Torah itself will make a geder and a siyag around its own isurim. For example, basar b'chalav, that the Torah says that you can't cook basar b'chalav because it's a siyag, lest you come to eat basar b'chalav. In fact, Rav Yosef Engel in the Sefer Lekach Tov in Klal Ches he starts off the piece by saying, I wonder, is there such a thing as a siyag d'oraisa? Does the Torah ever make a siyag around its own isurim? And if you know anything about Rav Yosef Engel's svarim, he's always thinking outside the box. He's thinking in different categories that people generally don't think of. He comes up with new concepts, and he says, I wonder if this is a real concept, and then he goes off and rattles off 25 examples from Shas and Bavli Yerushalmi, Nigla Nister. He was Bucky and everything. Rav Shechter loves Rav Yosef Engel's svarim because he thinks in a similar way. Like he doesn't think about this sugya, he thinks about globally. You know, like, so that's the Engel like rattles off like 20 siyag d'oraisas. Well, give me another example of the siyag d'oraisa. Where is this? Bali Rabba Yimatzi is Nisa d'oraisa, but it's lest you come to eat, right? That's what the Ran says in the beginning of Psachim. Oh, you guys just learned, right? So Chamez, siyag d'oraisa. What's another example of siyag d'oraisa? What? Okay, I wonder if he gives that example. I don't remember. He gives another example. Yichud daraisa, right? Machlokes Rambam Ramban with the Negiyah b'derech Taiva is this asa daraisa or asa mitrabanan. If you hold that it's this daraisa like Shitas Rambam, which we pass on like by the way, that it's asa mitraisa Negiyah b'derech Taiva. Why? Because it's a siyag lest you come to have bia with someone that's forbidden to you. So all of these things siyag daraisa.
Could this siyag be explaining what that Rambam from like the first day of Shemit?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, it could be. That's how the Kesef Mishnah understands it, at least. Yeah. So it turns out, maybe, if you really want to take this concept of Siyag D'Oraisa la halacha, that maybe when you're being mevashel down a sink drain, to things that are totally inaccessible to you, there's no siyag d'oraisa applicable because you can't eat it anyway. It's all the way down the drain. The thing is, we don't really do that. Meaning, we don't really adjust the halacha based on the fact that one way of understanding this din d'oraisa is that it's a siyag d'oraisa. So, you know, may or may not really be a tzad
d'haka.
Yeah. That's what the Kesem Mishnah says.
He probably
waited till it cooled off before he poured it down the drain. You know, before he poured the milk down the drain. If it's cooled off, then it's totally fine. Keeping one sink in general is complicated. Meaning, you certainly can't just have, dishes directly on the surface of a treifa sink where hot water is going to be going in, and sometimes there will be a backup, and it is somewhat complicated. You have to know what you're doing, but that's where Rav Reuven Feinstein's point to us last summer was, the answer is not to make your house in such a way that it's impossible for anything to become usher, because you'll never have enough things that you can incorporate into your house to make it impossible for everything to come out. So the answer is not to be an Amaretz. Like he was saying, that there's nothing that beats an education. If you actually know what to do, then things won't become aser. So if you become educated, then you're better off. Anyway, that was the message we got from Rav Reuven last year, among other beautiful messages.
Even if it is a gedor, I saw then why would it matter? Like Bar Rabbi wants is that going to be usher? Is that going to be usher even though you know you're not going to eat it?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. That's why it's difficult. Yeah, that's why it's difficult to use this as a cooler. Just thought I'd mention.
I didn't hear what was the way that Rabbi Chris had it flow to cool off
her. Because if you hold that the whole isser achila. What was it? If you hold that the whole Isra Hana'a goes along with the Isra Achila, and by Nevela, Ein Isra Chalal Isra, so it doesn't create an Isra Achila, so Mela doesn't create an Isra Hana'a. Okay. Now, the Gemara in Shabbos Taf Lamed Tes Amud Aleph tells us that Amar Rav Nachman, Bechama, if you're cooking in the sun, this may sound familiar to the four guys that were here last year. Everyone agrees you're allowed to cook in the sun on Shabbos. Let's say you live in Arizona or somewhere that is very, very hot, and you cook in the sun, so that everyone agrees is mutter. If you cook with something that was heated by a fire, everyone agrees that that's asr. Obviously, cooking in a fire directly is asr, but even cooking in something that was heated by a fire is asr. There's a guy in my shul who enters barbecue competitions. So he's like, he makes everything on it. He has like six grills in his backyard, and he makes briskets and whatever he's got. So one of the things he once told me in the context of asking a shayla about turning off a flame on a barbecue on Yontif is that when he grills meat, he very often only grills the meat after the fire is off. He heats up the grill to 1200 degrees, then turns the fire off, and then puts the meat on the grill. So that way the heat is evenly distributed. You're not going to have a fire raging and burning, charring one side. The heat will cook the meat evenly, and that's how he wins his barbecue competitions. So he was asking it in terms of turning off a fire on Yontif, because normally you're not allowed to turn off a fire on Yontif because it doesn't help in the cooking process. The cooking is helped by turning on a fire in Yontif. Turning off the fire is just for convenience. You don't want a fire staying on the whole Yontif. But he thought maybe he's allowed to turn off the fire in Yontif because it actually does help in his cooking process. He won't cook as well. So I thought it was a pretty compelling argument. But how did I get to that? Oh yeah, so that's toldos ha'or. That which is heated by a fire, kuli amlo pligi, that's aser. Ki pligi, betoldos ha'chama. The machlokas is that which is heated by the sun. Let's say, again, you live in Arizona and you drive a dark-colored car that really absorbs the heat of the sun. Then you take a frying pan and you put an egg in the frying pan and you put the frying pan on your car. And it gets fried by the heat that was generated from the car, which was only generated from the sun hitting the car. That's machlokas. Marasavar gazrinan told us chama atu told us marasavar lo gazrinan. Cooking in the sunlight is mutter, and Rashi explains why is cooking in sunlight mutter, in sun heat mutter, and it's only machlokas about told us chama. Says Rashi, ein derech bishulo bekach. V'chama ba'or lo michlufa deligzarha atuha. It is not normal to cook in the sun, and no one will confuse the sun for a fire, and therefore there's no reason to even make a gzera midrabanan. But not only is it not asu midaraisa, it's not even asu midrabanan. It's perfectly heter gomer to cook in Shabbos in direct sunlight. That's how Rashi writes. Why? Because ein derech bishul bekach. That is a key phrase. So yes, because we're gozer atuha. That's the question about the dud shemesh, right? Can you use the hot water? Can in Israel without the dud shemesh? How does it work exactly? So last summer we went through, I think, three types of dud shemesh and how they're made, and does it use only the tolda of the shemesh or the actual shemesh? But one second, let me get some words out here, and then we'll take questions soon. So that's what Rashi says. Ein derech bishul bekach. That anything that's not derech bishul is not called bishul. So is it necessarily true what Rashi and Tosfos and Sanhedrin say that tigun is not bishul? In the second, let's go back to that, and we'll come back. In the second parak of Maseches Pesachim, there's a machlokas Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, what it takes for a dough to be chayev and challah. So certainly it needs afia, but if you fry the dough, then it's a machlokas. And we paskin, like Rabbi Yochanan, that even fried dough is going to be chayev and challah. Even when you made the dough, your plan was to fry it, it's still going to be chayev and challah. Tosfos quotes Yerushalmi that's only if there was no oil in the pan. But once there's oil in the pan, it's not chayiv in challah. Once there's oil in the pan, it's not chayiv in challah. So you can understand that the Yerushalmi, that having oil makes it tigun, which is the equivalent of bishul, and not afiyah, right? And what's the Yerushalmi saying? For challah, it can't be bishul. If you cook the dough, if you make little, what do they call those things in pizza pies? Where they have little zeppelins, right? If you cook the dough, well, those aren't like oil, deep fried in oil. But if you cook the dough, it's definitely not going to be chayv and challah, right? Only if you bake the dough, it's chayv and challah. If you're mevashel the dough, it's not going to be chayv and challah. Only if you bake the dough, it's chayv and challah. So the Yerushalmi says, if there's oil in your pan, the Yerushalmi says that oil in the pan makes it not afiyah, makes it pater from challah. Whoa, that seems to imply that tigun is. No, it is bishul. It's not afiyah. If it's not afiyah, it is bishul. Not necessarily the greatest raya, because it could. The other way to understand the Yerushalmi is that who says there are only two categories? Meaning, maybe there is afiyah, and there's bishul, and there's tigun. It's not that tigun has to fit one or the other. Maybe there's a third category called tigun. So that's how Rashi must understand that Yerushalmi, that tigun is a third and distinct halacha category, neither bishul nor afiyah. So just because tigun is not afiyah with regard to challah doesn't necessarily make it bishul with regard to basar b'challah. It could just be tigun, and that's not considered derech bishul. Yerushalmi also discusses ma'ushan with regard to basar b'challah. What's ma'ushan? Smoking something, right? Not like smoking like that. Smoking like in a smoker. They pastrami is smoked meat, or you get smoked turkey or something like that. So they prepare it by exposing it to hot smoke. So the Yerushalmi discusses that as far as bishul basar b'challah and bishul akum and bishul b'shabbos. It doesn't really answer the question. Many achronim, including the Gran, the Pri Chadash, understand the Yerushalmi elsewhere says that ishun is kibishul for Shabbos, and therefore ishun is kibishul for basar b'challah as well. But let's elaborate on this a little bit, meaning two things. Do we necessarily compare bishul basar b'challah to bishul b'shabbos? Right, we know that Rashi doesn't. And then the second thing, what about alternative methods of cooking that maybe they didn't have in the times of Chazal? Right, we know chama is not bishul. Okay, bishul chama is not bishul. But what about microwaves? What about ready-to-eat meals? These kinds of things. Yeah, questions.
So back to the challah thing for a second. If there's no oil, why is that baking? I mean, baking is absorbed in an environment where there's a lot of.
Yeah, I think the point is that it's in a pan, as opposed to. Sleekeh, there's a meat usually, but this would be like that's where there are juices and sitting in its juices. Over here, it's a dough. So it's a dough in a pan. That's different than afiyah. Afiyah, the way they used to do it is they would wrap the dough around the outside of a cylinder and the heat was on the inside, and the walls of the oven were boiling hot, and they would wrap it on those walls. But over here, it's sitting in a pan. So that's the assumption in Shalom. Yeah.
So we learn something. Everybody agrees that being heated by the sun is not the shalom. And why would something that's removed from that
Because Drabban, that's what didn't mean Drabban. I mean, Midaraisa for sure told us Chama is not Bishul, right? It's a didn't mean Drabban, and that because you wouldn't know whether this frying pan was heated by the sun or heated by a fire, so you could easily confuse the two. Midrabbanan, it would be asr. Midaraisa. Oh, straight from the sun?
Yeah.
Cooking from the sun, yeah. You're saying. Cooking from the sun is mutter. Even midrabbanan. Yes, even midrabbanan. Had to go. That's what we just said, yeah. Told us a chama is asr, but chama itself is mutter. Had to go. Chama itself is had to go. So now, let's, again, two things. Comparing Bishul Basar B'chalav to Bishul B'Shabbos, and then microwave and chama and things like that. So do we necessarily apply the definition of Bishul B'Shabbos to Basar B'chalav? Apparently, the Rambam doesn't seem to think so. Why? Because the Rambam writes that when it comes to Me'ushan, he doesn't take a clear stand on Me'ushan. Now, with regard to 1 second, no, not the Rambam. Let's say it like this: the Gra and Rabbi Kiva Eiger, right? Rabbi Kiva Eiger quoted all those Achronim before that Ira Kli Rishon and Kli Rishon and all that. That clearly assumes that we do make the comparison. Rashi seems to assume that we don't make the comparison. Maybe this Rabbi Sabalowski suggests that maybe this relates to the relationship between Shabbos and all other areas of halacha. What's unique about Hilchos Shabbos, or maybe not unique, but something about Hilchos Shabbos, that Hilchos Shabbos have lamitas avos malachos. And then in addition to avos, mechaldi katoldos, right? By the fact that you call something an av, that implies that there's such a thing as a toldos. So by Shabbos, there's such a thing as avos and toldos. There is a machlokas rishonim. Do we have such a concept of avos and toldos outside of the three cases of Mabakama Beis Amad Aleph, right? The three cases of, you know, what was it? Tuma and Shabbos and Ezekiel, right? So do we have Avos and Toldos outside of those three areas of Halacha, right? Is it only a Chiddush Dafka by these three areas of Halacha that there's such a thing, Avos, Mechal, Dika, Toldos, or does everything have Toldos? So Machlokes Rishonim, Tosos, Maseches, Bechoros, and Daf Chav Vav, points out that the definition of gozes for Shabbos seems to be different than the definition of gozes when it comes to the isser of being gozes of Bechor. A Bechor Behema Torah has Kedusha, so you're not allowed to be gozes. It's also Begizah Va'avoda. You're not allowed to be gozes, you're not allowed to shear it. But what's called shearing seems to be a little bit of a different definition. In Hilchos Bechor, it has to be a full gozes, but in Hilchos Shabbos, there are toldos as well that you'd be chayav for. It's not only a full shearing of the animal. So Tosos seems to assume, Tosos seems to assume that in Hilchos Bechor, you don't have a din of a tolda. It's only in Hilchos Shabbos you have a din of a tolda. Nevertheless, the Shita Mekubetzes at the beginning of Maseches Baba Kama quotes Poskim that there are toldos by Nezikin as well, and therefore that's an example of toldos in Kala Torah Kula. That the fact that there are toldos by Nezikin is indicative of the fact that toldos are not only for Shabbos. So there is a special gzeres hakasav by Hilchos Shabbos that toldos are ka'avos, which implies that that's unique to Shabbos. But maybe the pasuk is only needed by Shabbos because you would have thought that toldos are not dumya d'mishkan and therefore shouldn't be included at all. That's why I needed gzeres hakasav to tell me that by Shabbos toldos are like avos. There's a gemara in Shabbos that says that toldos are like avos because of gzeres hakasav. Doesn't that imply that everywhere else where there's no gzeres hakasav toldos are not like avos? No, by Shabbos I needed gzeres hakasav because by Shabbos I would have never actually thought toldos are not included because they weren't done in the Mishkan and all the Yisurim of Shabbos are derived from the Mishkan. So it could be that toldos apply everywhere else as well. Me'ushan is not exactly Bishul, right? It's a very different process than regular Bishul. But in Hilchos Shabbos, what do we call that? Tolda. That's a tolda. So are you allowed to smoke meat on Shabbos? It's a Darabana or a Daraisa? Daraisa. It's a Tolda. Tolda is an Issa Daraisa. Absolutely awesome Daraisa. The Rambam doesn't necessarily extend that to basar b'chalav. When the Rambam talks about mu'ushar and basar b'chalav, he leaves it as a suffix. He's not sure whether it's chiv daraisa. And Shulchan Aruch here in Siv Vav does the same thing. Not a surprise, Shulchan Aruch always passes like the Rambam, almost always passes like the Rambam. Shulchan Aruch here in Siv Vav also says, mu'ushan, you're not going to be chayv malkus. Why? Because I don't know that it's necessarily in Issa daraisa. So the Rambam doesn't know to extend mu'ushan, which is definitely in Issa daraisa by Shabbos, to basar b'chalav. Because maybe toldos don't apply outside of the Shabbos. The Gra, the Pri Chadash, Rabbi Kiva Eger, they assume that toldos apply outside of the Shabbos. And that's why Shulchan Aruch and Sifat Pasan is like the Rambam. So he says, Hamu'ushan v'mavushal b'chami teveria, ain't lokin alav. What's mavushal b'chami teveria? Hot springs, naturally hot springs. Does it have to be chami teveria? No, lav dafka chami teveria. It means you're cooking, you know, in Pesachim, Rabbi Sablovsky pointed out, in Pesachim, the Rishonim are bothered. How could they have cooked the Korban Pesach? The Gemara talks about cooking Korban Pesach and Chamei Tveria. How could they have done that? You know how far Tveria is from where the Korban Pesach needs to be? How could they have possibly cooked in Chamei Tveria? So Rabbi Sablovsky points out that it's a klutz kasha. Because Chamei Tveria doesn't mean Chamei Tveria. It just means hot springs. It's just the hot springs that we all know about. It's Chamei Tveria. It could be any hot springs. You could in Yellowstone Park or whatever, there's hot springs. Wherever they have hot springs, it's Chamei Tveria. One second. So the Pri Chadash and the Gra seem to assume that told us to play outside of the Shabbos. Shulchan Aruch of here says, Ein Lokin Alav, meaning it's a Safek. So it's Asur Misafek, Afilu Bahana, like any other Safek Daraisa L'Chumra. Whereas the Pri Chadash and the Bira Gra and the Rav Kiva Eger seem to say Mu'ushan is Vadai Kibishal and not just a Safek. So Lagabe Hilchos Basar B'chalav is not going to make a difference whether you hold it Safek Daraisa or Vadai Daraisa. Either way, you can't do it, right? Where does the Chapa Yuge Nafkamina? Bishlakum. Bishlakum is only Asa Midraban. So if Mu'ushan is a Safek, what if you have a Goy that's Ma'ashin your food for you? And just to even take it a step further and show you how practical this is. This is like very, very practical. There are some poskim that say mu'ushan does not only mean with smoke, but with anything that looks like smoke. You know what else looks like smoke? Steam. Steam looks like smoke. What if you cook with steam? Some poskim suggest that has the din of mu'ushan. So what if a guy cooks food for you with steam? Is that asur mishum bishalakum? So you might say, when is a guy ever cooking with steam? Whenever you buy canned foods, like tuna fish, that's a food that was cooked with steam. When you buy a can of tuna fish, it's already cooked, right? It's not like sushi tuna fish, it's not raw, it's cooked. How do they cook it? They put the tuna in cans, they then put all the cans in a giant receptacle, and the walls of that receptacle fill with, I mean, the cavity fills with boiling hot steam, and the steam is what cooks it. So all tuna fish is cooked with steam. So there's a huge debate a few decades ago whether there's a problem of bishalakum on tuna fish. So one of the tzadim lahakel, remember at the time Rav Shechter was Mekel, Rabbi Tendler was Machmir. Rabbi Tendler had other problems with the tuna fish. He still will only eat a certain brand of tuna fish. I think it's called Dagim, is the firm brand of tuna fish that, you know.
It's disgusting. it's not shot on right up again.
Oh yeah, okay. So you know, and then it's not just Rabbi Tendler. Rabbi Belsky held that way. Rabbi Reisman, Rabbi Saul Reisman, every year in his Shabbos Hagadol Drasha warns everyone not to eat OU tuna fish. But Rabbi Shechter was making that decision. I once asked Rabbi Shechter about it. He said, "Oh, I wrote an article." He said, "Rabbi Tendler wrote about this." So I said, "I'm just curious to understand his perspective." So he lent me his copy of the Masorah Journal. Rabbi Tendler wrote an article, but it was Rabbi Shechter's copy of the journal, so it had Rabbi Shechter's notes on the side. So it was great. It was fantastic. Like each point Rabbi Tendler made, Rabbi Shechter like wrote notes on the side, you know, to argue the point. Like in one place, Rabbi Tendler said, "We don't find any posting that says whatever." Rabbi Shechter wrote, "I ain't." like a whole list. So you have this machlokes about the tuna fish. One of the coolest is that it's steaming, and since it's bishul akum, and steaming might have a din of mu'ushan, and mu'ushan is a suffix in Shulchan Aruch. So something bishalakum, you go lakula. If that were the only kula by bishalakum of tuna fish, we'd have trouble, right? Meaning, because is steaming really smoking? What makes smoking different than cooking? It's an entirely different process. Meaning, it gives a different kind of taste, even. When you cook something with steam, you wouldn't know the difference if you were cooking with steam or cooking it with water. It's the same basic change to the product. It doesn't have a smoky taste. It doesn't have a... So it's a little bit... The other kulas that they have for bishlakam, the tuna fish, is Rav Maisha has a kula that if it's factory workers that cook, where you would never even be able to identify the worker who did the cooking, so there's no gzeirah of chasnas, because you'll never be able to find them. And also, there's a heter by bishlakam that kol shein ol al shulchan malachim is ein bo mishum bishlakam. Anything that wouldn't be served at a royal banquet is not a violation of bishlakam, and no one would ever serve canned foods at a royal banquet. That's very low-class kind of eating. That's like the kind of foods you bring when you go camping or something. It's not the kind of foods you have when you are invited to a state dinner. And there's a din by bishlakam that kol shein echol kamo shul chai is ein bo mishum bishul inachrim. That anything that's edible raw is not a violation of bishlakim. So when these articles were first written in the 1980s, some wanted to say, since in Japan they eat raw tuna because they have something called sushi and sashimi, so they'll eat raw tuna, so maybe that's called that it's nechol kamo shul chai. And everyone tiny, what are you, crazy? Just because there's some shugayim do that in Japan, we're going to say that that's called nechol kamo shul chai? No normal person in this hemisphere does that. People don't. And in North America, no one is eating raw tuna. That's what the world that was in the 1980s. Now, if you're a pizza shop and you don't have sushi, then you can't self. You have no dignity as a pizza shop. Like you can't look in the mirror in the morning. What kind of pizza shop doesn't serve sushi? I think there are something like I think we have like 60 restaurants under the Vada Shkach in the Five Towns, and I think 80 of them serve sushi. That doesn't make sense, but you know what I'm saying. Like, there's a lot of sushi.
Does this mean that the Shabbos, what we consider bishul, is not about how you're actually cooking it, but about what it tastes like? Because smoking, for example, like if it's a gas smoker, it cooks the same way as a grill. But if it's an electric smoker, it cooks the same way as a toaster oven. It's like the only difference is.
No, it gives a different taste. So that's.
It doesn't matter that you're still using the same kind of fire underneath or the same.
I guess not. And all this brings us to microwave. Yeah?
If you use what? If you use something like a smoker on for Shabbos.
Yeah.
Can you technically do a bishlakum on Shabbos?
Because it's not bishlakum, you're saying?
Because there's no issue with bishlakum, plus the fact that the steamers only have to their abona, plus the fact that you can either turn it on.
No, but you're asking, meaning...
Amir Lakum,
you can do it. We don't do Amir Lakum L'Chachila ever. And it's only when it's Shvus to Shvus B'Makom Mitzvah B'Makom Tzor Kadom. It's never done L'Chachila. Now, what about microwave and Bishul B'Chama? So there is a Machlokas Tanoim. There is a Machlokas Tanoim about Bishul B'Chama Tveria, and whether that's considered to be Bishul B'Chama. So we paskin that it's the same as Bishul B'Chama. Right, why does the Gemara think that it might be Bishul Toldos Ha'or? So the Gemara thinks it might be Toldos Ha'or because the Chametzveria get hot by passing through the Pischa Shel Gehenim, that the fires of Gehenim heated up, so it's Toldos Ha'or. It's a funny, I don't know.
Anyway, you know?
What?
Warm hot springs heated up by usually by volcanic lava.
Oh, yeah, that's what it means. That's what it means when it says the opening of Gehenna. So if you want to know what Gehenna is like, it's a volcano. But we pass it the same as Bishul B'Chama. The Gemara says Bishul B'Chama is not a violation of Bishul B'Shabbos. So why would that be the case? So Shulchan Aruch, based on the Gemara that we said, says that only milk and meat that's cooked together, B'derech Bishul, over here in Sif Aleph, B'derech Bishul is Aser. That's what Rashi says, right? That it's only B'derech Bishul that it's Aser. So it sounds like the heter is kila achriyan. It's like you're doing it with a shinui when you do bishul b'chama. It's doing something in an unusual way. It's a little strange that kila achriyan would make something mutter, because normally kila achriyan, if you do a malacha on Shabbos, kila achriyan, mutter? Asr midrabanan. So because ein derech bishul now becomes mutter? That would be heter gomer. Bishul b'cham is mutter. And Rashi says, because ain't derech bishul. What does Rashi mean? It is mamish heter gomer. So the Eglei Tal asks, he says, ha'takti pirush Rashi taimit d'b'cham ha'atzma mutter dein derech bishul b'kach. V'yesh la'ayin d'b'shabes ha'nasa shalok k'darka ha'kol panami d'rabbanan asr. Normally that which is done shalok k'darka is asr midrabbanan. Why is bishul b'chama mutter? Should be asr midrabbanan like every other asr in Shabbos that's done with the shinui. So the Eglei Tal explains. Here it is: diyesh chiluk beinim yesh shinui b'hanase o hashinui b'ha ose. Meaning, there's a difference between a malacha that's done with a shinui, but the outcome of the malacha is the same one way or the other, and a malacha that's done with a shinoi, where the outcome of the malacha is a shinoi also. The outcome of the malacha is inferior. It doesn't get done as well. Hana'aseh versus ha'oseh. For example, you carry from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, right? So the object is going to be in the same location, whether you carry it with a shinoi or not. Right? It's the oseh may be the shinoi, but the na'aseh ends up the same. It ends up in point B. Goes from point A to point B. The only difference is how you got it from point A to point B. You did it with a shinoi. You carried it in your armpit or something like that. So if you carry with a shinoi, it's still asur midrabanan, because the outcome of the malacha is the same. But when you cook directly in the sunlight, which is considered like cooking with a shinoi, the food is different than it would be if it was cooked in the regular way on the stove. And therefore, cooking in the sun is going to be mutter, even midrabanan, because the outcome is different. When the shinoi is only in the oseh, but the na'aseh is not a shinoi, so then it's going to be asur midrabanan. When even the na'aseh is a shinoi, then it's heter gomer. But if you cook in a pan that was heated by the sun, no, what's halacha? Asur midrabanan. Why? The na'aseh is the same. It will work out beautifully. So according to the Eglei Tal, Ein Derech Bishul means that the outcome of the food is different than if it was cooked in the normal way. So says the Eglei Tal. One second, let's say Rav Moshe, and then we'll hopefully have time for questions. Rav Moshe or Chaim Chel Gimel Simen Nun Beis disagrees. Rav Moshe writes, Da'al Yidei told us our mitzad shenechshav zek kebishul mitzad ha'esh atzmo, harei hachamim ushva ha'mayim vasuda harei ume'esh umelu b'chlal bishul ha'esh atzmo. When you cook in toldos ha'esh, it's like cooking in the esh. Shalchein, afshloya bishul zeh mamish b'mishkan, kivin shein lachshov zeh shinoi midarech ha'malacha chayiv. Even though they didn't cook in toldos ha'esh in the mishkan, it's close enough. V'dami zeh lehamid kedera b'richa k'tzas yosar me'esh m'kvidarech b'nei adam. It's like holding a pot like an inch off of the fire instead of directly on the fire. It will cook, it will just take a little bit longer. So of course you're chayiv in that case, even though they didn't do that in the Mishkan. In the Mishkan they cooked a little more quickly and put it directly on the fire. V'lechein, k'shem toldos chama, when you have a toldos chama, af sheshavin mamish b'midas hachom, k'molim hayu toldos har, even though it's just as hot as toldos har, k'ad dechamei tveria, k'ad desudu shavach m'yusso yachal levashal beitza, if you have a cloth that's able to cook an egg, potter. Dimitzad Atzman ha'ein lemelev toldos mi bishul eish shayeh b'mishkan mi'achadein haderech kol kach levashal behem. It's unusual to cook with such things. V'kol achiyuv b'toldos ha'or hu mitzad shu nechshav bishul b'chamimus eish shazeh alaka k'toldos ha'chama. He says toldos ha'or yuchayev because that's the same thing as or itself. Shenachshav kein harei mizbashal b'chamimus t'chama she'in b'chashivus mulacha v'tamzeh yosem mistaver. And that's, he says, that I think is the chiluk between toldos chama versus toldos eish. Toldos eish is a din of eish. Toldos chama is just an unusual way to cook. V'im kein behamiker veiv oven. Shetov. I hope you didn't get stuck on that word for too long. Shetov levashel bo. He wasn't goreis modern Hebrew, or maybe just didn't know modern Hebrew, so he would always just spell it out in English. Air conditioner, right? Microwave oven. So when it comes to microwave oven, Shetov levashel bo kimo be'esh mamish. It cooks just as beautifully as fire. Ve'elu sheyesh lahem tanur kazeh mishtam shvo yoser mi bishul ke'esh. U'mashalon espashu tanur me'elu adayinu mishum tula motzva adayin harbe tanurim. The only reason not everyone has this yet, this new invention, the microwave oven, is just because they haven't been able to mass produce it yet. But I'm telling you, this is going to be the next big thing. Every house is going to have a microwave oven. Some too, right? This is going to be like everyone's going to cook. No one's going to use ovens anymore. They're just going to use microwave ovens because it's awesome. It's better than an oven. So vada yesh lemeil from yivishal da'ar da'ayev b'mishkan b'chashivas tolda shul lekal adinim ka'av d'vishal ha'idayar le'isser ul'chiv skiluchatos. Meaning, derech bishal means normal way of cooking. Normal way of cooking is the way that they cooked in the Mishkan. Even if you have a specific form of cooking that wasn't exactly the way it was done in the Mishkan, but as long as it's normal, that's bishal. Says Rav Moshe, now that they've invented microwaves, that's normal. And therefore, that's bishul. But no one cooks in the sun. It's not normal to cook in the sun, and therefore it's not bishul. It's not about the fact that the resulting food tastes any different. It's not about the na'aseh, like the eglital. It's about what is normal to cook with. So cooking in the sun is not normal, mutter. Microwaves are totally normal. Now, you could argue with the Metzius. Rav Moshe was talking in the very early stages of microwave. I'm old enough to remember when my family first got a microwave. I remember my parents brought home a microwave. It sounded like I was born in like the 17th century or something. My parents brought home a microwave. It was like very exciting. My brother was like baking potatoes in the microwave all night. He kept on putting potatoes in. In 5 minutes, you could bake a potato. And he kept on like, we're eating potatoes with butter like all night because my brother kept on baking potatoes. So it was like, whoa! Rav Moshe had no idea how it would actually be used. So how often do you cook in the microwave? Almost never, right? What do you use a microwave for? You heat up food that's already cooked. If you ever do cook in the microwave, it's only because you're stuck. You just don't have time to cook normally because it's not as good. Right? The made-for-TV dinners or whatever, you know, like, not as good. So you could argue with Rav Moshe in terms of Metzius. Right? But Rav Moshe is assuming that if it's a normal way for a person to cook, that's Bishul D'Oraisa. So to melt cheese onto a burger in your microwave, Rav Moshe would assume is Nisa D'Oraisa. Rav Shlomo Zalman had a third shita. Shlomo Zalman held that Bishul D'Cham is not called Bishul, not because it was abnormal, but because Bishul requires that there be a fire present. Unlike Rav Moshe, who thought the microwave is Bishul D'Oraisa, Rav Shlomo Zalman holds it can't be Bishul D'Oraisa because there's no flame, there's no fire, there's no heat. According to Rav Shlomo Zalman, the definition of Bishul holds true for Bishul Bas Michal Volsa. If there's no fire, it's not Bishul. Microwaves are therefore not Bishul Bas Michal Midaraisa. Huge enough meaning for Bishul Akum also. Can Bishul Akum be done in a microwave? This was the famous machlokas between the Dunkin' Donuts in the Five Towns and the Dunkin' Donuts in Elizabeth, which were the first two Dunkin' Donuts to be kosher in the country. And it used to be in the Alter Heim, in the old days, in the Dunkin' Donuts in the Five Towns, there was a sign by the microwave, if you want eggs, you have to come push the button on the microwave. Because otherwise, Bishul Akum and Dunkin' Donuts in Elizabeth, Rabbi Teitz was makel, but it's not called Bishul Akum in a microwave. That was the big difference between them. Nowadays, I asked Rabbi Eisen, who's the head of Arvad, who runs Arvad, why we don't have such a sign anymore. Did we change our psak? He said, no, the eggs changed. They come in like these prefab things. He says, you know, like your kids have like a toy kitchen where they have like these fake eggs? That's what Dunkin' Donuts uses, right? I mean, they're like, they're not Ola on any shulchan, let alone shulchan malachim. They are disgusting. So it's that's why we're making that the guy can do it in the microwave. So regarding MREs, right, the meals made ready to eat, so what happens? You heat up the water with chemicals, but then the water cooks the food. So the na'aseh is the same. The Maisa is totally different. So the Eglital and Moshe would be flipped, right? The Eglital would say, oh, the Nas is the same, Bishul D'Oraisa. Even though the Eglital would say about a microwave that it's not Bishul D'Oraisa because it has a different taste to it. Whereas when it comes to Rav Moshe would say that it's MRE is not a normal way to cook. And Rav Shlomo Zalman would say there's no fire. And therefore, it's not Bishul D'Oraisa, Basa B'Chalav, on the MRE. So it could be that it would turn out that way. Okay, what we still haven't discussed is how cooked something has to be, like Machu Ben Jusai, Mavishal Kol Tzorcho, to violate Bishul Basa B'Chalav, Kli Rishon, Al Gabe Ye'esh, and then there are like a whole bunch of chumras that the Ramah has in Sivav, and we still have to discuss gelatin. I B'li Neder, two more shiurim on Siman Pei Zayin. Sunday we're going to start Siman Pei Ches, or next week, whenever the first year is. I may come a little late Sunday, we're not sure yet. But two more shiurim on Siman Pei Zayin, tomorrow and Friday, and then we'll move on to Siman Pei Ches. Maybe Rabbi Samlovsky will give shiur Sunday. That would be nice. All right.